sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Sean Sears, and joining me today is my co-host, Ryan Davis. Ryan, the winter meetings have come and gone, and still no Bryce Harper. Refunds in the mail, right? We talked about this in the other podcast. It's coming.
Yeah, no, the you can easily trade in all your Cubs Bryce Harper Snuggies for White Sox Bryce Harper Snuggies, I think.
Perfect. Well, it sounds like he's the favorite. We'll talk about that. The winter meetings have come and gone, like we mentioned here. The Cubs haven't made any massive moves, but no one in the MLB really has at this point besides maybe the Cardinals, and that was before the winter meetings. So nothing really big has happened. I think everyone's kind of posturing themselves for a Bryce Harper run. It sounds like Ducks are in a row. We'll talk about that in the first segment. The second segment, the Cubs, finally, they have figured out who the piece is coming back in the Tommy LaStella trade from the Angels, the left-handed pitcher. We'll kind of look at him and see where he might project with the Cubs. Future, whether it's 40-man roster, whether it's minor leagues, we'll figure that out here for you. And then we will also talk about in the second segment, Manny Ramirez as a bench coach. One of our good friends, Jared Willis, kind of threw the idea out on Twitter, so Ryan and I are going to play with that in a little bit. And then the last segment, we'll talk about Lee Smith and Harold Baines making it into the Hall of Fame.
So. And if you stick around for that segment, I've pulled up Fangraphs. I know WAR is not like the perfect stat, and I don't think guys should go into the Hall of Fame based on WAR, but I have a fun little players who have more WAR than Harold Baines thing, just to put all that into perspective.
So free agency, winter meetings have come and gone the last couple of years. The winter meetings has kind of been the place where a lot of bigger free agents have signed. Last year that wasn't necessarily the case. Shohei Ohtani kind of made decisions, but nothing was definitive, I think, in the winter meetings until about a week later. But it sounds like teams have kind of made their pitches, or at least have at least talked to Bryce Harper and have engaged with them, and now they're just kind of finalizing their deals. I know we talked about in the other podcast before, you know, you're saying, Ryan, that the Bryce Harper wants to go to the Cubs, is letting them kind of pull things together before they make this official offer to them. But while this was going on, reports came out that the White Sox are apparently the favorites to get Bryce Harper now, according to Jim Bowden, the Athletic and former GM of baseball here. What's kind of your takeaway from this, you know, with the Cubs kind of walk away, not necessarily empty-handed, but with no real players added to this roster yet?
Yeah, no, I'll start this out by saying, you know, we talked on the last podcast about some stuff I had heard from somebody I trust, and you can take that with as many grains of salt as you want, because I'm not the most tied-in guy, but I haven't heard anything new on that front. Basically, as far as I know, the situation is Bryce Harper will still give the Cubs a little time to be able to put together their best offer, and if they're able to make moves. I wasn't told this, but I'm just guessing there is a cutoff date at some point where, you know,
right,
he wants to move on if they're not able to figure stuff out. So with that said, you know, White Sox, that's also Chicago, just a different franchise. So if being in Chicago is the main thing for him over necessarily playing for the Cubs, you know, that could be to the Sox advantage, because I haven't looked at it recently, but they don't have really any money on the books for next year. It's all like low salary pre-arb guys and low arb guys, and then like a couple players like Jose Abreu is going to make over, like, they have a very small amount of players who are going to make over $10 million next year. So
Right.
I think it's less than $50 million of committed projected payroll for the Sox. So they could easily afford, you know, basically whatever they want to do for him. The interesting part is, and I wrote this for my last piece at Bet Chicago, Jerry Reinsdorf, I can't remember if it was during the winter meetings or before, but he publicly said, or said to a writer, that he doesn't think the Sox would be able to win a bidding war for Harper. Now, again, they have pretty much empty payroll going forward, and they have, at least for, let's say, the next 6 years, they're going to have guys who are going to be the heart of their team who are pre-free agency. Guys like, you know, Eloy Jimenez and, you know, Michael Kopech and Dylan Cease, all these guys. So it sounds kind of like Jerry Reinsdorf wants to support his team in going after Bryce Harper, but at the same time, he's also sending that message to everybody else, like, but you'll also be able to outbid us. So it sounds like he's kind of like sabotaging himself on Harper. Like just knowing Jerry Reinsdorf and his history, it sounds maybe like, yeah, if Bryce Harper wants to come here, we want him, but also I don't want to pay the money.
Yeah, it was like the most reluctant, like, yeah, I mean, if I guess we get Bryce Harper, that'd be cool, but also it would suck to pay him.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, great, thanks. I don't know. I think Rick Hahn said something very similar to where he was saying, the White Sox GM, that he didn't expect them to necessarily spend a lot of money either this offseason, which, you know, if you're adding Bryce Harper, you're going to spend a lot of money, right, whether you want to or not. So it whatever. I, you know, it's hard to take really anything from this. I know it was pointed out yesterday, though, that while the Cubs have, you know, are probably trying to figure out if Bryce Harper is realistically an option or something they can afford or want to afford, the Cardinals have added, you know, Paul Goldschmidt. The Brewers did add Claudio. Reds just traded for Tanner Roark. The Pirates have added Chisenhall, Gonzalez, Lyles. They've traded Ivan Novoa. Not, I mean, outside of Goldschmidt, no one's really going to make a drastic impact in this division, but all these teams are getting a little bit better, while the Cubs are kind of, you know, essentially waiting to see how Harper plays out. If they don't get Bryce Harper, I know we were kind of chatting about some names before we got started on the show. I brought up AJ Pollock. Why don't you tell me why I'm wrong?
You're not, I'll say it this way, you're not necessarily wrong, and I think there are a lot of people who are also AJ Pollock fans. I'm just not. Look, so he had that big breakout year, right, where he was like really good for like 75 games. I think it was in 2014 where he was good, and then 2015 was the big breakout where he had like a, looking here, 130 OPS plus, hit 20 homers, stole 39 bases, batted 315, 367 on base, almost 500 slugging. That's great. The next year, he only played 12 games because he got hurt. So if you look at 2016 through 2018, and he's been somewhat healthy the last 2 years, but if you want to look at it, the last five seasons, he's only had one fully healthy year. He only played the 75 games in 2014, then 157 2015, 12 2016, 112 2017, 113 2018. So he missed, you know, like 50 games essentially in each of the last two seasons. But just over the last 3 years, these injury years, 261 batting, 323 on base, 473 slugging. So good slugging percentage, but an OPS under 800, 102 OPS plus. I feel like Ian Happ can give you that for way less than what what AJ Pollock's going to give you. So I don't understand. Like, if you're going to make that move, you're probably then turning around and trying to move a guy like Ian Happ, and instead of having like a 25-year-old Ian Happ on the roster doing the same thing for like $700,000, you'd be giving AJ Pollock, what, like 3 years, $50 million for his age 31, 32, 33 seasons. That move does not make any sense to me.
Yeah, that's.
Did I make a strong enough? Did I make a strong enough case to turn your mind around?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, the injury history has always been something I've been somewhat concerned about, just because he's been hurt basically since 2016. That 2015 season was awesome, but yeah, at this point, unless he's really going to be healthy and turning it around, it looks like an outlier. He's hitting into his age 31 season. I don't know if I want to necessarily commit 3-4 years to AJ Pollock in the outfield. Yeah. I don't know if that would be the deal, but I would assume at 31 he probably wants some type of security.
Yeah. He's a good outfielder. I mean, he won a good glove in that breakout year. So making the comparison to Ian Happ isn't necessarily fully a great comparison. It's not fair, I guess. Over the last 2 years, 3 wins above replacement, 2.5 wins above replacement. So even in partial years, that's good. It's just that, you know, we all know as players get beyond 30, the defense starts to lag. Even look at Jason Hayward. He's not even 30. He's, what, 28? And his defense started to trail off a little bit this year. He's still a great defender, but wasn't as good as the previous years. So, you know, if his defense starts to fall off and his offense doesn't revert to essentially what he did 4 years ago, that's not a guy you're wanting to pay that money.
I would agree with that. Circling back to the Bryce Harper stuff here a little bit, I forgot to mention this. Chris Bryant did show up in Las Vegas I believe it was late Tuesday night, maybe Wednesday morning, however you want to look at it. Showed up. He didn't really talk too much to the actual media. I politely declined, as everyone described it, but he was there obviously to talk with the Cubs about Chris Bryant, my source, but would be my idea. There was a tweet from Patrick Mooney where he talked to Jed Hoyer and he said Chris Bryant has got a pretty direct source being Bryce Harper. So obviously Chris knows the situation. I mean, I don't think anyone's trying to hide anything in these internal discussions. They just don't want the public to know, obviously. So Chris Bryant and these guys know what's going on. They're just, you know, obviously having him there probably helps. I don't know what exactly he's there to help with, because I'm assuming, you know, they're talking all the time, Chris and Bryce. So
you would think, like, you know, people that I'm pretty close friends with, I text fairly recently or fairly, you know, frequently. So I would assume they do the same thing. But I want to get back to the fact that you said, and I saw more than one person say this, that he politely declined to speak to the media.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I've never seen Chris Bryant impolitely do anything.
I was going to say, like, when has he ever been a jerk? I feel like he's always just like, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't have the time for it, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, even that time that he, like, got into it with an umpire, I'm pretty sure he said, like, oh, shucks, come on, please call it correctly.
Yeah. Pretty please.
I'm sorry, I have a difference of opinion, and you may feel the way you feel, but... it reminds me of, like, when people were digging up bad tweets from major leaguers, that somebody went and found Chris Bryant's tweet. It was like September 1st, 2014. So it was like the day everyone figured out that no, he's not coming up to the big leagues. And he tweeted off fiddlesticks.
Christopher Bryant, you potty mouth. He really is just like the nicest, sweetest guy.
I've said this, I'm so cynical, but I've said this before to people, like, you know, having been in that clubhouse and talked to a lot of those guys in other clubhouses, you know, we don't really know anything about a lot of those people, but the only player that I, in Major League Baseball, that it would legitimately surprise me to find out they're kind of a, you know, jerk or a scumbag, that's Chris Bryant. Mm. If you told me, like, we have evidence on anybody else that they're a scumbag, I'd be like, yep, nope, makes sense. Yep, people are terrible. But Chris Bryant, that would shock me.
Yeah, I think I'm about the same camp here too. So, is there anything you want to wrap up on free agency wise before we move into the second segment?
I wanted to talk about the actual market for Bryce Harper. Forgot to bring that up pre-show, but
sure,
we can, if you want, we could talk about that second segment.
Okay, that's totally fine. Let's roll into that second segment. We'll talk about the trade, the player coming back in the Tommy La Stella trade. Mention here some stuff on Manny Ramirez, potentially as a bench coach, and then we'll touch on the Bryce Harper stuff as we roll into the second segment here in Locked On Cubs. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Locked On Cubs here. As I teased before the break, The Cubs have officially figured out who is coming back in the Tommy LaStella trade, which is great. I think we all assumed it was cash considerations at this point. But the Cubs are getting back left-handed pitcher Connor Lillis White. Ryan and I keep on calling him Lily White. He is from Canada. He's a 26-year-old left-hander. Essentially a career minor leaguer, it looks like, for the most part. Not necessarily anything fantastic, I will say, but, you know, he's got a 3.35 career minor league ERA. Looks like he could be something. He's kind of been essentially just a reliever. It's probably a toss-up whether this guy actually makes the roster, but as a left-handed reliever, the Cubs do need those. Maybe they see something in Lillis White. I wanted to say it again. What was your take on this, Ryan?
Well, I don't really know much about him. I had to go look it up, and then it surprised me that he struck out 98 batters in 72 innings last year between AA and AAA. That's really good numbers. That's he had 12.3 K per nine in 72 innings. He had four walks per nine, so that's a little high, and that's about consistent with his minor league career. I went to I saw Michael Ernst, who we had on the podcast I think last week. You can find him on Twitter at MJ_Ernst if you want to see more of his prospect opinions. But he tweeted that he was a little surprised that the Cubs actually got a player. And I can read a couple of things that he said here just to give you an idea of who this is, because I think he would be able to give better insight than either of us. He said, Lillis White is a big lefty reliever that missed a ton of bats last year, 98K in 72 innings, K percentage above 31% at both levels, walk rate is a little high, held up decently against right-handed batters, started getting more ground balls this year, which is, but is also a bit homer prone, especially at AAA. Then he said, Lillis White's fastball topped out around 90, but he has some side arm run and good downhill plane. His breaking ball is 81 to 83, and it's his go-to pitch. Generates good amount of whiffs when he keeps it at the knees or below the zone, effectively backdoors it to right-handed batters. Mixes in a changeup well. He's effective when working the bottom of the zone and below. Can elevate fastball for effect, but it can get in trouble when it struggles to keep pitches down as the ball tends to flatten out on him. So it sounds like he is another like Zach Roscup, like a guy who might, you know, probably better than Zach Roscup just because of the strikeouts. But yeah, it sounds like he, you know, maybe is your AAA stash lefty reliever. Another Randy Rosario, I guess, with more strikeouts. It's hard to nail down because it's you don't see a lot of 90 mile an hour fastball guys with 12 K per nine, which that's not normal, especially at the high level of the minors. He's 26 years old. So I think he'll turn 27 next year at some point. So, it is an interesting move that I have very little information other than what I found from Michael. I would say don't get your hopes up that he's going to be anything. And if he is, hooray.
Exactly. Anything you get out of him, great. Probably just a move to basically clear a roster spot for another guy that adds more flexibility to the roster, I'd guess, more so than Tommy LaStella. So really not much more inside here. He'll probably be in spring training team, and we'll see what we get from him there. But let's touch on the Bryce Harper stuff you were mentioning here before we moved on from the first segment, mentioning just kind of some of the teams involved here. Obviously, the Phillies and White Sox are kind of involved, but who are some of the teams you think are still in this year, Ryan?
That's part of why I wanted to talk about this, because I want to, like, brainstorm who is actually Bryce Harper's market. So the Nationals said that they're pretty sure that they're moving on. They supposedly made a $300 million offer to him for an extension, and he turned it down. And as far as we know, there's no conversation going on there. So it's possible the Nationals get back into it if the market drops out, and they're willing to make a better offer than anyone else. But so the Nationals are out. The Yankees say they're out, although Scott Boras says that he thinks that's a tactic, and it may be. But, you know, roster-wise, I think Manny Machado might be a better fit there, considering they have Judge and Stanton already in the corner outfield spots. So the Yankees may be out. The Phillies have said that they're out, at least, you know, privately. And then they went and got McCutchen. We don't know if they're in, but they may be out. The Cubs may not be able to afford it based on their own created financial limitations, not wanting to move past the next luxury tax area. So it really, like, is there anybody but the White Sox and maybe the Dodgers that's really definitely in on Harper right now?
Yeah, that's, I mean, those are the only two teams that I think for sure are, like, without a doubt interested in Bryce Harper, especially with the Dodgers rumored to be interested in trying to move up either Puig or Kemp or both. So Dodgers for sure. White Sox just have a ton of money, but keep painting themselves as a team that won't pay Bryce Harper the money he wants. So, I mean, how can you take them seriously? I guess you have to just because everyone keeps bringing them up. But I really feel like it's, I mean, the situation, the way the market's panned out right now, doesn't seem like a lot of teams are willing to pay Bryce that much money. And if the Cubs are able to maybe get pretty close to the number that he's getting, he probably should go to the Cubs because I can't see a better situation. That being said, you know, if a team really does, I mean, all it takes is one team to just get stupid and be like, all right, here's 370, you know, like what do you think of this? And, you know, just get ridiculous from there. So, but I mean, there really isn't too many teams that are really interested in Bryce, like are actually in this for real outside of maybe the Dodgers and the White Sox at this point, I would say.
Yeah, so what does that do to Harper's market then if the White Sox are saying we're not going to get into a bidding war? Do the Dodgers come in and basically say, okay, so we'll give you $22 million a year for the next 4 years, and we'll give you an opt-out after the second year? Like, you know, that's way below market, or at least below what, you know, people projected a player like Harper would get. What does he do at that point?
I mean, I guess you have to try and you take the best deal you can get at that point, I guess, if the market's really going to kind of collapse underneath him. We saw it happen last year. Yu Darvish took less money. J.D. Martinez was far more affordable than people thought he would be. And it seemed like the Red Sox were the only team really interested in him. So the Red Sox kind of got all the power here. And I feel like that's what Boris and Harper are trying to avoid here, teams being able to kind of dictate really what the market is. So I mean, at some point, this I don't think, while we've heard a lot of news, I don't think this is wrapping up here in the next like day or two. I think this is probably gonna be another week or potentially 2 week drag out, especially if Harper and Boris aren't getting the money that they want. So I mean, it's,
I would be shocked if he signs before January.
I mean, at this point, it doesn't seem like there's any real, I mean, like, what, you know, like what something drastic would have to change. We're not seeing anything like that. The market's relatively quiet. Teams are waiting to see if this is going to play out. Eventually, teams are going to be like, okay, well, you know, if this isn't going to work, we're going to go on and do our own thing. It seems like the Phillies have kind of already ventured down that as well. The Yankees seem to be doing their own thing at this point as well, too, whether or not they're interested in Bryce Harper. So teams are eventually just going to be like, okay, well, you know, if this is the money you want, we're not going to pay it. You know, best of luck and go handle the rest of their offseason, because there are options out here that need to be addressed. Obviously, Manny Machado's kind of been put on hold here a little bit because of this issue. There's plenty of pitchers and relievers that need to be swapped up. Guys like Jed Lowry need to find a home. the ever important Jed Lowry. But you know what I mean? Right. Like, there's other guys, these mid-tier guys that need to find homes too. Eventually, you know, teams will realize that, you know, hey, maybe we're won X amount of games. If we add this guy, we're probably better off than we were before. So.
Yeah, and, you know, sorry to interrupt, but you mentioned Jed Lowry, and I wanted to touch on that. He's older than Harper, obviously, by several years, but I think over either the last two or maybe the last three, he's posted more wins above replacement than Harper. So they don't play the same position. They're not, you know, really at all the same player. But if you look at it from that point of view, would you rather have, you know, 3 to 4 wins from Jed Lowry over the next maybe 2 or 3 years? Or would you rather sign Harper and get, you know, kind of the, I guess, worst case scenario is that you get a continuation of what he's been, where he has the great year and then kind of the drop off, and there's concerns about his defense, you know, kind of dropping off this year. You know, there are reasons to say, like, Okay, so maybe teams are looking at it and saying, okay, I'd rather go sign Andrew McCutchen for 3 years, $50 million with an option for a fourth than give, you know, Harper, you know, essentially $35 million a year over 10 years. So it may just be that teams are balking at the whole idea of giving him 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a ton of money to give to a guy that has, I mean, his historic MVP seasons to, like, you know, just a little bit above a replacement player and maybe a war, essentially one war better than replacement player sometimes these last couple seasons. So I could see the justification, but it's also kind of like, I mean, this is a legitimate top 10 player, maybe even top 5 player in baseball too. So it's such a weird situation because we all kind of assumed that every team would be jumping at the bit to try and get Bryce Harper, and it seems like every other team is pretty much just kind of downplaying the situation, not really saying what they're trying to do. Every team's obviously interested for the most part, but you know, not a ton there. So we teased here before this second segment here about the idea of Manny Ramirez as a bench coach for the Cubs. Of course, he was a coach for the AAA team down in Iowa, the Iowa Cubs. Has worked with Javier Baez. Joe Maddon constantly compares Javier Baez to Manny Ramirez, a great hitter, one of the best hitters in baseball. What's kind of like, what would be some of the things that you point at Manny Ramirez and be like, yeah, you know what, this guy could be a pretty solid addition to a hitting coach or a club?
I think he could if he was interested in doing it. That's the thing. I know that he was interested in doing essentially the same thing in AAA. I'd be lying to you if I told you I've been following what he's been doing the last couple of years. So I don't know what Manny Ramirez is up to, but I do think he's at least as interesting a name for bench coach as the names that have been kind of thrown out, like Mark DeRosa or David Ross. I think he's at least as interesting and maybe even more plausible than Ross at this point, if he were interested and the Cubs were interested. So, I think he could bring a lot, especially to some of the Latin American players. I feel like he worked out a really good relationship with a guy like Javier Baez when he was in AAA. So I think it would work on a lot of levels with a lot of the players. But outside of him, yeah, and the other guys mentioned who I don't think are likely either, I would say all three are pretty unlikely, but I don't know who else there really is. Like, who is the front runner for Cubs bench coach right now?
Right? No one. At least no names that we've heard. I think for me at least the positives for Manny Ramirez is that obviously he can build the relationships and relate to these guys similar to what David Ross can do, but I feel like the big advantage to him is, you know, he wasn't a teammate of these guys 3 years ago. He wasn't, you know, a guy that would have to really kind of change the way he might have some of these conversations. Manny Ramirez can go in and build off of relationships he already has with guys like Javier Baez, as well as, you know, name one person that doesn't like Manny Ramirez. You know what I mean? There might be some Yankees, right? But but like, he's just a likable, fun guy. It's tough to be upset with him over anything. I mean, the dude could, you know, throw a ball into the stands by accident and just smile and he'd be like, oh, Manny, you goofball. You know what I mean? Whereas like Milton Bradley does it and it's like, oh my God, crucify this man. So there's definitely that for him. Plus, I mean, he's a historic hitter. He's one of the best hitters the game has ever seen. You have to think at least he has some type of insider knowledge that could help this team, especially for a team that obviously had their offensive struggles. But these are all some – I mean, the Cubs have some of the best hitters in baseball on their roster right now. You know, like adding someone like Manny Ramirez, they don't necessarily maybe have to change their approach, but he can add a different level of insight that maybe some other guys might be don't have or maybe haven't thought of or, you know, whatever it may be. So,
yeah.
That's kind of my.
Yeah, that's,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah, there's. I agree. I don't have anything else to add on that. We're at a position in the offseason where we're talking about Cubs bench coach because they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, this is so Like, I apologize if this isn't at all interesting to the listeners. We're just not, there's not a whole lot for the Cubs to be, like, they're even for the open positions, like, they have open spots in the bullpen they should be going after guys. They have, you know, they needed to sign an offensive player. They have an open bench coach spot, but there really hasn't been all that hot of rumors. The one rumor that, I guess, from winter meetings that we didn't talk about was they got tied to a couple different relievers, one of which was Bud Norris, a real chud from the St. Louis Cardinals. And he, you know, outside of having said some pretty questionable, as nicely as I could put it, would be borderline racist things in the past about the right way to play the game and how essentially players from other countries should shut up and listen and play our way. Outside of that, he also had an issue last year where essentially he was policing and spying on other younger bullpen members. I know when I did my story on Jordan Hicks early in the season, Bud Norris was someone he talked about then as being particularly tough on him, and I didn't take it as much at the time, didn't know how just how much it bothered him. And then we found out later, yeah, it was like bordering on kind of like being sort of abusive, and Hicks really didn't appreciate it. So that's a player that I think the Cubs should stay away from. Thankfully, report came out pretty quickly after that they were not interested in him. They went out of their way to say that they were not seeking Bud Norris at this time. So that's all fine and good. A lot of Cubs fans sighing relief there, but that was probably the most interesting thing that happened at winter meetings.
100%. And I mean, thank God Bud Norris isn't coming here, but man, we are starved for some content right now. So good chance to call into the voicemail and give us your thoughts on things. We'd love to hear why you think the Cubs are getting Bryce Harper or why Manny Ramirez could be a good bench coach. I want to keep saying Manny Machado. I'm sure the Cubs would be interested in that. but let's roll into the third and final segment. We'll wrap up some Hall of Fame talk and kind of go over the Cubs were tweeting these holiday tweets of just random things. Rizzo throwing against himself, Javi stealing second, Kyle Hendricks pretending to be excited. Yeah, some fun things happening here. So we'll wrap up the show here in Locked On Cubs. So it was announced earlier this week that both former Cub pitcher Lee Smith and former White Sox infielder Harold Baines were named into the Hall of Fame. Lee Smith, it sounds like he's going to go in as a Cub, which is great. One of the best pitchers the Cubs have had ever. And then Harold Baines, one of the better, like White Sox player. He kind of played a few places, but I kind of a guy that I don't think anyone like looks at him and it screams Hall of Famer.
No.
There's a lot of like old man takes here where people are like Tony La Russa was trying to say he like led the league in game winning RBIs or something like that, and it was just like yeah, that's a thing I guess, but like why are we pointing to that and be like he's a Hall of Famer because of this? I don't know. I know you had some interesting stuff about Harold Baines.
Yeah, so I went to Fangraphs and pulled up their like all-time WAR list of the last, I guess, like 70 years or so, going back to 1950, just to eliminate some of the pre-integration players. So I wanted to tell you he has 38.5 wins above replacement. That's basically right in line. Troy Tulowitzki has 38.3. Ryan Zimmerman has 38.4. Placido Polanco has 38.4. So that's about where he ranks if you look at just wins above replacement. Aramis Ramirez is ahead of him at 38.7. Among the other players that are ahead of him, Giancarlo Stanton, still playing, Alfonso Soriano, Jason Kendall, Reggie Sanders, Chuck Knobloch, Ray Lankford, Lenny Dykstra, Steve Finley. I gotta click back here, but there's some pretty good other names on the list as well. I guess we can cut this part because it's not moving that fast. Okay, I'll pick up again. Paul O'Neill, Carl Crawford, Nomar Garciaparra, Devon White, Hanley Ramirez, Ryan Braun, Brett Butler, Torii Hunter, Ben Zobrist. Ben Zobrist has like 5 more wins above replacement. Jose Reyes, Carlos Delgado, Johnny Damon, Mark Teixeira, Jorge Posada, Matt Williams, Mark Grace, JD Drew, Dustin Pedroia, Ian Kinsler.
My God.
Moises Alou, Andrew McCutchen, Evan Longoria, Curtis Granderson, Joe Mauer, who probably will be a Hall of Famer, at least for Mauer.
Yeah.
Matt Holliday, Jimmy Rollins, Jason Giambi, Jose Cruz. We're getting David Wright. Now we're getting to some like actual great players. Luis Gonzalez,
yeah.
Ron Say, Joey Votto, Lance Berkman, Jeff Kent. I'll stop there, but at that point, Jeff Kent is number 91 on the list of WAR. So it tells you how much further I could go with that list. Vladimir Guerrero, who's a Hall of Fame guy. That's something.
That's bad. Like, that's bad. Obviously, like you mentioned here, like WAR isn't the be all end all stat, but it's a pretty good indicator of how effective you were as a player throughout your years. And I feel like Harold Baines, not a bad player by any means, one of the better players to play this game, but I don't know if Hall of Famer should be attached to his name. Now, a lot of people have come out to defend this. A lot of people come out and said, you know, this is stupid. I think just looking at the stats doesn't support it. He was one of the best players in his era. I can kind of see why he's kind of... I mean, this was his last year, wasn't it? But it was both him and Smith's last year, wasn't it?
I think so. Wasn't this some sort of special committee? I don't follow the Hall of Fame as closely as other people do.
I don't either. Yeah, I think it was a special committee. Obviously, at least Smith deserves to be there. I mean, he was one of the best relievers the Cubs ever had. He had, I think it was 5 straight seasons of 30-plus saves in a Cub uniform. He had a career high with the Cubs at that time, 36 saves in his last season. Struck out over 10 per 9 innings, like clearly stud. Harold Baines, looking at his stats, you're kind of just like, okay, so like pretty good utility role player guy. That's what we have in the Hall of Fame right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's a DH. He had a couple of really good years at the plate. He had a couple. I don't have it up in front of me, and I'm not going to try and pull out a stat that I don't think is totally accurate because I don't have it, but I looked at his numbers based on Baseball Reference, and it was basically like the first 5 or so years of his career that he built a lot of the wins above replacement, and then after that, he was fairly marginal overall. And I know that's a lot because, you know, he was not a good defender, and he was a DH a lot, so it's harder for DHs to build wins above replacement because they don't have any field value. But last name I want to throw out who is on this list, Jim Edmonds. This is a guy who was off the ballot after he didn't even get enough votes to remain on the ballot for Hall of Fame. 64.5 wins above replacement for his career. He had more home runs than Harold Baines. I think he had more RBI. He had a higher walk rate, higher OPS, higher WRC plus, higher OPS plus, basically better in just about every single way. And plus, he was an outstanding defender. He couldn't even stick on the ballot with nearly 30 more wins above replacement than Baines. That tells you everything you needed to know right there about how messed up the Hall of Fame process is.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bunch of old guys. Let's be honest, like a bunch of older guys that have been around forever. I'm sure plenty of them have soft spots for Harold Baines. He might have been a good guy to interview. I don't really know a ton about Baines, but there's probably more extenuating circumstances to why he got in. But yeah, obviously Jim Edmonds is a great counterpoint comparison to that show. And be like, well, hey, this guy did just about everything right, and he was off the ballot in his first year eligible. So.
Scott Rowland, what happened to him on the ballot? I don't even remember, but I know he's not in the Hall of Fame.
He's a guy that probably deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
He's number 33 on the list of total WAR over the last like 70 years.
Yeah, I mean, you could
we could go on and on about this forever.
Right.
There's plenty. Adrian Beltre is number 18 on the list.
He'll
be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he'll make it. I don't know about first ballot, but he's definitely going to be there. So.
Yeah, he should.
Yesterday was Fergie Jenkins' birthday. Happy birthday, Fergie.
course, one of the best pitchers in Cubs history, another great one. We did touch on the Mark DeRosa stuff. It doesn't sound like he's necessarily interested in being a bench coach, but it sounds like the Cubs checked in on him. I'm not opposed to Mark DeRosa. I don't necessarily like him on the MLB Network, but I like Mark DeRosa as a person. So, trying to see what else is over here. They updated the Cubs front entrance here a little bit. Instead of the iron like arches they used to have there, they've replaced them with steel ones. I don't know. Someone was calling it a facelift. It just looks about the same, just a little bit shinier. So, congrats. I don't know. Beyond that, though, that's about the show. We're hoping for some more news here. Gosh, it's been pretty dry. Obviously, things will have to start to happen. Things will pick up. Like you said, Ryan, I would assume after the holidays, we'll probably see some moves happen more and more as teams and people start to get less focused on what's in front of them and more focused about, hey, you know, we have to play baseball in 3 months here. So, but with that, anything you want to throw in here before we go, Ryan?
No, I guess this is going to be another long off season, so hang with us. We're doing the best we can with the information we have, but it wouldn't shock me at all to see Harper signing, you know, middle of January. And before we sign off, this is an idea that Jared Willis threw out there. Give him props again. He essentially said he thinks that MLB should modify the way they do the off season to try and curb some of this. His first thought was essentially like, you know, have a 3 week or a 4 week off season and then cut it off and say no signings after that until spring training starts. I don't love that idea because I think it probably kind of screws the players and forces them to feel like they need to take like take it or leave it deals at a deadline. My thought was maybe you just do like the NBA does. You know, you don't start free agency the second the World Series ends. Maybe free agency opens on December 1st. And you do the winter or the GM meetings when you would do the winter meetings, and then you do the winter meetings in January. I don't know how feasible that is for Major League Baseball or if it makes sense, but it could help a lot of the stuff where, you know, essentially you're scooting spring training up closer and these, you know, these guys have no other option. These teams have no other option than to make their best offers to sign these guys, you know, fairly early.
Yeah. I think that's good. Obviously, I know there's a new CBA negotiation that's going to be happening. I think it's in, is it 2019 or is it this year? Or is it 2020?
I think it's 2020. Yeah.
I think you're right.
I think so. Yeah. The current CBA is what, 2 seasons old now?
Yes.
So yeah, it would be 2 more seasons. I think they signed a 4-year contract.
Okay. So I'm sure, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things wrong with that. Just the international players issues that we saw with Shohei Ohtani last year. Just, you know, there's a lot of stupid things that break the coach or the team's ways that it seems like the owners knew, and it seems like Tony Clark kind of knew and just kind of was like, okay, well, yeah, I guess you can do that. So
and they brought him back as their leadership,
right? I know. I've just
we could do a whole nother podcast. I'm sure a lot of the listeners know this. My background other than baseball writing is labor relations.
Yeah.
So I could go on and on about the problems I have with the MLBPA, but that's another talk for another time.
I have plenty of things to complain about as well, so we might save that for another podcast. But you guys have a great rest of your weekend. Hopefully we have some exciting news to come up for you. But if not, we'll see you next week for more Cubs podcast talk. You guys have a great weekend.